Willkommen zum Ecom Secrets Podcast. Hier erfährst du, wie du mit deinem Online-Shop endlich deine Umsatzziele erreichst, ohne dabei abhängig zu sein von Amazon oder Online-Marketing-Agenturen. Wir zeigen dir, wie du deinen aktuellen Status quo durchbrichst und dabei nicht nur nachhaltig, sondern auch direkt in die Skalierung kommst. Und hier ist dein Host, Daniel Bittmann.
Willkommen zu dieser neuen Podcast-Episode hier im Ecom Secrets Podcast. Und in dieser Podcast-Episode habe ich mal wieder einen Interviewgast mit am Start. Und zwar einen, der mir ganz besonders am Herzen liegt, den ich Anfang dieses Jahres kennenlernen durfte. Wir hatten das ein oder andere Zoom-Gespräch. Wir haben uns getroffen in Griechenland auf der Insel Zakynthos zu einer wirklich High-Level-Mastermind. Und heute habe ich die Ehre, meinen guten Freund Juri Knetl hier im Podcast interviewen zu können. Wir werden darüber sprechen, wie er sein Spezialgebiet ausgebaut hat, und zwar wie man in osteuropäische Länder profitabel skaliert, damit über 15 Millionen Euro Jahresumsatz generiert, höchst profitabel. Er wird uns einmal die genaue Strategie erklären, wir werden über sein Mindset sprechen, wir werden auch über diverseste andere Themen sprechen und kleiner Cliffhanger, am Ende haut er nochmal ein richtiges Golden Nugget raus in ganzer Steve Jobs Manier, we have one more thing. Und bevor ich jetzt hier zu viel rumlaber, ich switch jetzt gleich auf Englisch, wir haben das ganze Podcast-Interview auf Englisch aufgenommen, denn der liebe Jure kommt aus Slowenien und ja, viel Spaß damit. So pumped to have you here on board on the podcast. First of all, before we dive deep into all the topics, how are you today?
Hey, Daniel. Thank you very much for the invite. It's great. So today is awesome. Just preparing for Q4. A lot going on and super excited to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. So to give the listeners a little bit of background, how we met and so on. I think we met this year, like beginning of this year, actually, through a friend of us. And
I think it was this year, at the beginning of this year.
Yes, and since then we met on on Zoom calls, we exchange our knowledge, and then lately we just attended
to
a mastermind.
We swim in the pool together.
Yes.
We swam in the pool, it was awesome, yeah.
Yeah, so we already spent a lot of time actually together. I really like this. So you're based in Slovenia, right?
Yeah.
So for all the listeners, Slovenia is a great country. I will definitely visit you. My goal is like within Q4, but let's see if it's feasible with the stress and so on.
Awesome. Yeah. I hope you will able to come to have some chat, talk about strategy, have some fun. I also have been to Germany a couple of times. It's great. When I was actually a kid, almost every month we went there because my father actually went to, I think it was Munich, for business. So we were actually traveling together with the family to Germany.
Yeah, I live in Munich, so that was pretty close, right?
Awesome.
Amazing. So, before we dive into the content, you are super successful with what you do. You scaled to insane amount of revenues with your brands and your clients and what you did in the past. So maybe as a beginning to get to know you even better, maybe you can share a little bit about your story, what you did before, what do you actually do right now? And
So first, thank you very much for the compliment. I'm not very good at accepting compliments. I wouldn't actually call myself successful because I see so much things that could be done also in the future, a lot of progress in front. But thank you very much. And regarding the background, so I come from a small country, Slovenia. I started with marketing, e-commerce, and entrepreneurship like a little bit more than 7 years ago. It was directly from Faculty of Economics. And after finishing the university, I had no idea what I want to do with my life. I think it's pretty common story, I guess. And then I actually had a chance to work as an intern in one marketing agency, where I actually learned the basics of digital marketing. And I just felt the connection and the passion to this topic right away. So At age 21, I started my first advertising agency. It was a Slovenian-based agency, and the niche that I was aiming for was actually how to help Slovenian businesses to sell in other markets. For those of you that don't know, Slovenia is super small, so if you target super broad on Facebook, you have 1 million people in the audience, so not a lot of scaling to do, and you actually pump up the frequency pretty quickly. So we're actually looking for the opportunities in other markets. So how we did it is that we actually approached like some smaller e-commerce companies in Slovenia and helped them scale to eastern part of Europe first. And we're just going country by country, localizing players, local player there. So I was in the agency for 3 years. We grew to 15 team members. And back then I didn't know anything about leadership, how to build up the team, about sales. This was also a huge challenge that I have at the beginning of the journey. But then, yeah, like the first 3 years it was building my own agency. Then it was at the point where I want to actually learn more than marketing. So I actually want to learn how e-commerce business work. And I decided that I will sell the company, and I joined one e-commerce company as the CMO, where I have actually the opportunity to build up the marketing department from scratch and also be involved in other operations. Long story short, so we actually grew in 4 years. We actually grew from 0 to 50 million yearly revenue. And after that, I actually started WeScale. And WeScale was founded at the beginning of 2020. It's basically is the combination between working in-house and having like marketing, advertising marketing agency. So we work boutique. Right now we have 4 clients, 25 people in the team. And we basically just, our main areas are localization, is going to eastern part of the Europe, performance marketing, retention, influencers, and so on. So this is like in a couple of sentences, my story.
So
with 10,000 challenges on the way.
I bet. So thanks for sharing your story. It's really impressive actually to see how fast you grew with your agency as well. And actually, before I want to start into the tactics and localization and so on, I want to talk about with you about your mindset, because this is something I realized when we met in or on Greece and also in the calls before. I remember like back in Greece, there was like basketball, like championships or something. You were watching it. So you're really, really into it.
Yeah.
And then when we were in the pool and we talked about topics, then I realized, okay, you're really working on yourself, and you're always like want to be like achieving excellence. I had the feeling like the famous basketball players. So now you're leading a team of 25 people, so maybe you can share a little bit about how you see entrepreneurship, how you see your role. Are you more like a leader, or are you more like a boss or something? So where's the connection between basketball and your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, I'm that entrepreneur where delegates everything and just lay on the beach. That's me. No, just kidding. So, it's a really interesting connection, because at the early ages, I was super into basketball, and my goal was actually to become a professional basketball player. And during that time, I was actually following a lot of superstars from the NBA, and I watched like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and so on. And I really love the mindset that they have. So like super competitive. And also when I did a psychology test, actually the competition was actually my number one strength that I have. But I think it's not only external, like competing with others. I think from my point of view, In my case, it's like more competition against myself. So just trying to be a better and better version every day. I took a lot from them. I also still love to actually look at some videos, read some books. I run of the favorite people that I actually follow is their personal trainer, Tim Grover, like reading his book, doing his program. And the way I see myself is that when I actually got started, I actually was looking for a confirmation that I'm good enough. So I can actually do this because I was new on the market, a new area. No one knows me. So for me at the beginning was just, okay, am I good enough to do something in this niche? So to do something in digital marketing. And after that, it was like, okay, I'm good. Can I become like great, or can I chase for being the best, like operator, executor? And I was like super into my first area of digital marketing was Facebook ads. And my aim was just, okay, let's try to be the best Facebook advertiser as possible. And then I realized that, okay, what about, because I come from the team sport background, what about if I build up the team, I could do so much more. And then I started building up the team and I saw, okay, I need totally different skills to build up the team than I did when I tried to be like a really good media buyer. So there were a couple of things I need to learn, how to lead, how to hire, how to communicate. I wouldn't say I learned it because I don't believe you actually check the mark. I think it's like an ongoing process, like just trying to improve constantly on daily, weekly, yearly basis. But yeah, it was a really good transition on how to actually go from try to be an expert to try to become a leader. And being a leader, try to actually create a network of people that are leaders. Because for me, it's really interesting to talk to you because I know you also have people, how you deal with them, how you hire, how you actually strategize with them, how you communicate with them, also build up the network of leaders, entrepreneurship. And for me, I was always a huge believer of if you want to do something great, we need to do it together. And we're just trying to build up the right culture, the right system to actually achieve the maximum potential or try to actually go towards the maximum potential of each team member. So even I know that if we work together, I know that we are not going to work together till the rest of our lives. But let's on this journey that we have together, although it might be like half a year, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, let's try to improve ourselves. Me as a leader, maybe you also as a leader, and maybe also you as an expert. So it's just, I think it's really cool because I actually connected also with sports because you need to train constantly. Otherwise, you're just getting worse and worse. And I'm somewhere in between being like a captain of the team versus being the coach or something like that. So it's really, really interesting connection that I see.
And how do you feel today in this, I would say, new role with like a lot of people compared with being one of like a good media buyer from like one person to a 25 person team? How do you feel today?
Right now, I feel really great because the last experience that I have in a previous company, I had like a similar size team. But looking at back, I felt like that I'm not ready. I was like afraid. I didn't know where to look for help. And I think one of the main challenges that I have was that I didn't ask for help. So I actually want to figure it out alone. And that was bad, obviously. And I didn't have actually the skills to try to become a good leader. And it was an awesome experience for me, although it was super painful when I left the company. And I know I failed as a leader back then. And it was just a challenge for me how to go to the next story and become like a really good leader. I wouldn't say that I'm a great leader, good leader, but I'm actually pointing in that direction. So I'm really grateful that I am in a position that I am. And I'm also really grateful that the people that are in the team trust me to lead them, because it's not only from my point to trust them, but it also is the other way around, because I believe that each person have the freedom to choose their leader.
Are you getting motivated when you see your team succeeding, like getting better with skills and so on?
Yeah, I'm super. It's I don't know how it feels when you see a kid, your child, when they do something, but I believe it's something similar because I sometimes hire for expertise, what they have, and sometimes I hire for a potential that I see in the people. And the greatest feeling that I see is that when someone comes work in the company for half a year, 1 year, 2 year, and then they actually really grow as a person, they become a leader, or they actually take over a department, or they achieve some amazing results. So it's really fulfilling for me, I would say.
I totally resonate. I have this exactly the same feeling. We hired, the first hire was a video editor in our company last year, and with zero experience in video and in creatives and so on. And today he makes insane creatives. They're selling so much on Facebook. And I love just to seeing people grow when you give them the right time, the right like the knowledge and the right training and so on. It's amazing.
Daniel, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Would you say that you are good at giving them positive feedback or not?
I tend to give more positive than negative feedback, I would say.
Okay.
For me, it's really hard to give like not so easy feedback, so more on the negative side. But yes, I try.
We are the same, I believe.
I always give, when someone is doing really great stuff, I always like give them props and say, yes, great job.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Great to hear.
Cool. So I hear you are, we're like-minded in the leadership. It's, I always, when you have like those conversations, not only in the podcast, but also in the Zoom calls, I really enjoy the time. So let's go to the juicy stuff.
Okay.
I think the listeners, they're super curious. So to give you a context of the listeners, they're mainly from Germany, Austria, and Switzerland.
Okay.
So German speaking markets.
Awesome.
And often a big topic is that how they can, I would say, like scale internationally in other countries. Then, of course, like Spain, Italy, France, and so on, they're the obvious parts. But not a lot of brands are trying it in the Eastern countries. So what would you say is the one of the biggest benefits if you are crack the code to sell in Croatia and so on in those countries?
Yeah, so... less competition, I believe. So it's like for the bigger Western part, it's like there's a lot of competition and you have like the CPMs are higher, the CPOs, the ROAS is worse. You need to work a lot of on the retention side. And a lot of brands forget about the Eastern part of the Europe, but you still have some really decent or big countries and a lot and really good like purchasing power that you can actually use or you're actually aiming for when you build up the e-commerce business. For me, an eye-opening moment was when we actually did 2 million in 1 month in Czech Republic. It was like an eye-opening. I never assume. Because I actually, in my past, I work a lot in US, Germany, France. This was the background that I have. So really super high budgets, not that good, not that high ROAS, but we were still in the targets, targeting worldwide. We actually also did like some European based targeting. So EEA or Europe or going for Germany and so on. But we actually realized that if we localize some of the Eastern part of the Europe, you can still achieve really good numbers. Like, for example, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary. These are the markets that I actually saw like the businesses doing between 1 to 5 million per month, which is like really decent numbers. If you have like, I know that you can aim even higher in Germany because you have like a lot of population there. But I would still say that Eastern part is our untapped market because on where they are with the e-commerce, it's not that far like in Germany or France or Italy or Spain, something like that. But they still have the purchasing power and there are a lot of developing brands there. And if you look at it, if you position yourself in like Czech Republic, Slovakia, and you do like 3 million or 1 million, 2 million, something like that on the monthly basis, imagine how many percentage of people you actually reach with them and how you can actually position yourself as a brand. Because with that, you can build up the brand quickly because it's smaller markets. You have advertising space is cheaper because there's less competition. There's a lot of word of mouth recommendation. And you can also, you can position yourself better in the smaller markets that are cheaper and build up the brand. And then you can actually achieve like super high profitability there and then open up a new market. We have like one example. So with one of our brands, we actually grew from zero to 40 million yearly revenue in 2 years. So it's like amazing growth. I haven't seen anything like that. And with them, like the secret was just going market by market and become a stronger player on the market. Because if you look at it, like if we would start, I wouldn't say that it's right or wrong way mm-hmm. to start in a big market, but for us, it was easier to start with the local market and then achieve some point of sales in the existing market and then open up the second market. And with them, so right now we have like 6 markets and we really achieve like really amazing numbers with them. And we really, when we actually did some surveys, run some surveys on the brand recognition, we actually realized that we have an amazing brand recognition on the markets that have like between 10 to 20 million people than we have on the bigger ones. So I think it's also like untapped opportunity because there's also, you can build up the brand and achieve some really good numbers with them.
Okay, I bet you said it's untapped. So I bet there is a reason for it. So localization, I don't know, payments, shipping, and so on. Can you walk us through when you say, "Hey, okay, let's go into this untapped markets." What do you need to solve or to achieve that you sell there quite well? Because I think they don't, not a lot of people there understand English, I assume. So what's the process?
Okay, so you can go like 2 different ways. So if you want to test the market first, I believe you can still test the market also in English language, just to understand, because part of people are actually buying from the international brands. It might be that they are a little bit younger, so they could be like between 23 to 35, something like that age range. They can actually also... that would also buy, or especially if you have like really Instagram first, very visual products. I believe it's a huge opportunity there to also test in English. But other than that, is just for easier understanding is if you want to create a local store, let's say you are from Germany, mm-hmm. what you need to be aware of. So you have on one end, you have the language on the website, language on the ads, language maybe on the creative, if you have like some localized creative. The second one is obviously you want to pay with your local payment methods, because you're in Germany, you're used to pay with Klarna. And if I enter the market and I don't have Klarna, you see, okay, I don't trust this company because I'm used to it. So you need to actually adapt to the local needs. So the second one is usually the payment methods. The third one is, I mentioned it, the ads. So to actually run in local language, maybe you can also try to get some local UGC from them, maybe with some tool to find, or you can actually hire some local influencer marketing agent to find some content creators for you. The fourth one is observe what, for me, it's the easiest part is to observe what the biggest brands on the markets are doing and what they actually are also using for delivery. Because in some markets, you have some delivery services that really are hated on that market. Mm-hmm. And people don't want to accept packages from them because maybe packages get hurt. Maybe they last a lot of time to actually deliver the packages. So we usually also and try to understand which are the local delivery services. It's not necessary to start with, but it's something good to have down the road. Like within first 3-4 months is something good to implement because it will affect you how many packages get delivered. It affects you affect your reviews, because we have some examples where on the review side, everything was right with the product. They just hated the delivery service. And so the rest of the reviews were like 4 and 5. And for delivery, we had some 1-star reviews. And okay, there's nothing wrong with the product. We just need to switch on the delivery services. So yeah, I think this would be the main points that I will aim for. But also keep your eyes open if they offer cash on delivery. If they have some local payment methods, Klarna, PayU, something like that, you can figure it out either Googling or try to look at it on some local, the biggest local players. If what kind of guarantee do they offer to their packages? So I think it's to start with, these are the main factors that you need to look for. And on your end, how to build up the processes to operate in multiple markets, how to find like translators, how to find copywriters, how will you run the ads, will you hire someone local or will you do it with German to, let's say, Polish translations to just see which copy is actually passing where. And one big lesson that I have is use copywriters, don't use translators, but use copywriters. I have some painful challenges, Daniel, you also know about them. But use someone who also know the marketing language to prepare the text in the local language.
So there might be some listeners now hearing what you say and thinking, oh man, this is insane work. What would be, you mentioned like cheaper CPCs and so on. I mean, what is the upside if you go this road of really translating everything compared with, I don't know, do you know the numbers in Germany, for example, like the CPMs versus Czech Republic, or you could even like look into the US?
You can give me some benchmark on the German, because I might give you the wrong one, but it's somewhere between 12 and 15, right?
Depending on the market, but
product, yeah.
Yeah, totally. But the range is between what we are seeing between €6 to 20. This is the range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with Eastern part, it might be between 3 to 8.
No, I'm smiling. So this is really, I'm just imagine like your ads will be so much more profitable than if you run them in Germany or other European countries. So this is like, for me personally, like the biggest upside you can have, like you will be so much more profitable.
Yeah. Profitability also, like the brand recognition, because we saw with some brands, I wouldn't call them brands. So companies that sell branded products. For me, like a brand is someone who can turn off the ads and the sales are still popping up. So I call them usually branded products. So the way I see it is, when you're actually in this eastern part of the Europe, when you're present in like for half a year, 1 year, so you have a lot of word of mouth, also a lot of organic traction, and it's much easier to achieve good results. Also, like the iOS change on the western part of the Europe was much more effective than it was on the eastern part, because on the eastern part it's more Android focused. We had like some example, one company in France where we have like 40 to 50% of total traffic that is coming come from the iOS devices, and we have some eastern part of the Europe where only 15% of the total traffic is coming from iOS devices. So it's like not that vulnerable yet. I don't know what's coming next, but we actually didn't saw huge decrease on the attribution between like the real results and how actually the Facebook is reporting them, or Google Analytics or something like that.
That's quite interesting. I think in Germany right now we see like 30 to 40, sometimes even 50% less data in the ad accounts. And I had a call 2 or 3 weeks with John Hagen from US, and he even told me, okay, they have like 70 to 80% data loss in the accounts. So US is crazy. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because, the way I see it is, you have more data, you have like customers that want to buy the products. Maybe you need to, sometimes it's also really a challenge when a company comes from like the Western part or USA company, and they need like, for them, they need like average order value of 130 or 150 for them to be profitable, to aiming for this 2x ROAS or something like that. And Eastern part, because the advertising place is cheaper, you can actually be selling products that could sell between 30 to 70 euros and still have like return on investment of 3-4 or something like that. So it's really important, but you might change your, which are the top sellers, price policy, or maybe if you sell in bundles, also try to sell like on the single products. So maybe, yeah, this is something that I also didn't mention. The pricing or the bundles, the top sellers might change when you actually enter the company that don't have like this huge purchasing power. They still will buy, but maybe they will buy some other products that are the top sellers because you need the average order value super high in competitive markets for be profitable. On the less competitive markets, you don't need that high of the AOV.
That's interesting. That would actually be my next question regarding the AOVs. So, I'm not the expert on those Eastern countries, but I assume they would have a little bit less purchasing power than, for example, Germany. In Germany, like a typical AOV would be something between, I would say, 50 to 100 euros, even 120. Yeah. Would that be, for example, too expensive for, I don't know, like Croatia? Is it like more on the 30 euros? How high can you actually go?
So I would say that everything up to like 70 euros is still impulse buy. Higher than that, you might do some magic on the retargeting. But yeah, still you can actually, you can sell also more expensive products for sure. But I think the sweet spot that right now we are aiming for is between 40 to 70. We have like one project that also is, so everything is the same. The average order value in Germany is 80, and in like in Czech Republic is 60. So there was like 20 euros, and everything is the price policy is the same. But the German are actually, I believe, used to buy more products, I guess. For them, it's like what we see is that German people, in eastern part of the Europe, so usually the AOV on the first order is lower, like for the entry point. And then when you work with some products for retention, the AOV just gets higher and higher and higher. So at the entry level, it's usually less, but you still have, for the next purchases on the email marketing, SMS, you still can see that there are really good AOVs. Mm-hmm. But if you know that you also have like lower cost per orders or cost per acquiring customers, it still works.
And beside email and SMS marketing, did you ever use call centers as well to really phone call them?
Yeah, a lot. In the last company that I worked, we had like really huge call center. So it was first what we did is we actually were calling them for the abandoned carts. I don't know if this is still legal or not.
Not in Germany.
I believe it's not. Okay. Yeah. It was a long time ago. So I don't know what was the policy back then. So yeah, that was. And then after that, it was, yeah, for the cross sales on the purchases. So we actually had like a call center for the eastern part of the Europe. And they were actually making between 10 to 15% of the total revenue was actually generated from call center. And it was super profitable because you didn't have to actually pay for the advertising space.
Yeah. And then you can even upsell them amazingly on the phone and can recommend products and so on.
I have actually a friend. So one company that comes from Slovenia, I believe they do something like they were doing like 600 million per year, and they were actually present in 27 different markets. And for them, it was actually, they're more traditional. So it's like TV plus call center. Mm-hmm. And with them, they saw that when they actually also introduced like the e-commerce store, they actually saw that with the call center, the AOV was usually 3 to 4 times higher. When they were actually using the call center. So in the e-commerce store, the AOV for them was like something like 700 euros. Sorry, 70 euros. Mm-hmm. And with like call center, it was 3 to 4 times higher. So yeah, I believe a call center work, especially if you deal with a little bit older generation, plus also if you have some product that could be sold for a higher AOV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, I assume. Mm-hmm. So when you would say, I bet we have some listeners here in the podcast who would think about scaling into Croatia and so on. What do you maybe have, like two or three concrete tips, or like step by step, what, I don't know, like thinking about countries, thinking about translating the store, how would you go from Germany to other countries in the Eastern European?
Yeah, the first tip would be don't go to Croatia.
because you're dominating.
No. It's not that. It's just that the population is not that high. Plus, they're super, super demanding and they are really cheap. So they're not actually used to like any premium products. If you have like a discount store, this is the place to go. But if you have like some branded products and want to build up on the retention side, don't go there. This is just the tip based on the experience. It might be wrong in some cases, but this is just my opinion. So regarding the going to other markets, what is usually the way is to go to closer markets to your country. Because if I would be in Germany, I think my first choice would be Poland. Mm. This would be the first one, I believe, because it's a little bit cheaper. You need to actually be aware that you need, I believe, PayU. They have something like P24 and cash on delivery regarding the payment methods. But other than that, it's not that many changes that you need to do. So besides language, I believe you also have some really good logistics routes to the country. So this would be the first option for me. But other than that, I would just try to understand, okay, how big is the market? Is the market, because if you're aiming somewhere, I would aim that the population is still higher than at least 7 million, or try to aim for the countries that have like 10 million plus. So I would go for Czech Republic, maybe Slovakia and Poland. So this would be the three that I would choose because the e-commerce there is growing like super fast. They also have like good purchasing power and they used to, especially from last year, so from the Corona times, a lot of population is actually buying online. So I would go for these three countries. And you could go like, if you don't have experience with that, I would try to actually hire a local, either agency, expert, e-commerce store, just for the consulting to say, okay, what is important when I enter the market? What is important? And I would just take the ads and creatives that are working in the existing market and go to the new market. And then see what's happening with the metrics, how is my conversion rate, and then move from there on. But I would still say that look for the countries that are close and that have the population and try to connect with the local expert.
Mm-hmm. Would you say the consumer psychology it's totally different to, for example, Germany or Italy or something like compared? I often compare like US market with German market. This is a completely different mindset. But would you say also the Eastern countries are pretty much similar to like Germany and so on?
Yeah, for Germany, based on the experience that I have, you need much more credibility and much more social proof if you want to actually position yourself on that market. It's not necessary in eastern part of the Europe, but it's still a huge benefit. So I believe if you actually take the approaches from Germany and go to the eastern part, they will work because the market is not used to that advanced tactics. Because you see, when you have a lot of competition, you need to get like smarter and smarter and smarter. And also the standard of the industry is just getting higher and higher and higher. And the guarantee is higher. How many reviews you need is higher. How many different tools for reviews you need. How much description you need to have on the website. It's much higher on the, like in France, Germany. I believe Germany is especially special because I believe there was a lot of scams, I believe, in that market, and people Absolutely. Just don't trust. I believe we also have this I think I have the discussion also with you, and you're also explaining me regarding that. But I believe it doesn't hurt on the eastern part. It's not necessary, but it will be a benefit for you. So I wouldn't say that the psychology is actually changed that much. It might happen that the people are more impulse buy than on the German market. Maybe the time lag that you have on the German market might be 2 to 3 days. On the eastern part, it might be only 1 day, because people are just want to try new stuff.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Yeah, German people are really like rational. They need proof. They need guarantees. They need certificates. And we talked about it. I remember. So to summarize, so you gave us a pretty good overview about the chance to, or the, I would say, the chances to go east. For you personally and WeScale and your brands you're working with, I bet you want to grow them even more. So what are your next steps beside, I don't know if you already entered all the Eastern European markets, but if yes, do you even think about entering America, Australia, and so on? What are your future plans?
Yeah, so we have like some, I call it, that we have like some three stages of where we are on the market. So we have like some testing market when we need to actually position ourselves to sell, be profitable, achieve good numbers. So this is usually when we open up a market, this stage usually takes, depend on the market, but it might be between 1 to 3 to 4 months to actually figure out the market. Then we are on the growth stage to, okay, we found something that is working. We need to actually just put the budget behind. We need to open up new channels, build up the retention channel. And then, or I would say four. So then is the scale part, to pop up the budget as much as possible and become like really a digital first, like a strong player on that market. And then the last stage that we have is the challenge for us, like in the next few years, is how to actually become a brand on that market and to position yourself to be sustainable on the market for a longer period of time. So it's not only sales, but it's also how to actually build up the presence and how to build up the community behind that, how to introduce new product categories, how to actually keep them entertained and build up the tribe in that market. So I believe this is the challenge, the positive challenge that we will have in the next months and years. Mm-hmm. We're also building up the team for that, because I think we are at some point on some markets, we are at that stage. We know that we can't actually like triple the sales, but we know we can actually, maybe on the long term, we can actually double the sales. Or maybe stay the same, but we need to do so much more than the paid side. And also after that, like also go like to TV advertising, radio, PR, and so on. So to go, okay, digital will be just the entry point, and how to actually build up the tribe for that. And after that, how to actually build up like this multi-channel brand. This is the first challenge on the existing market. Then select new markets. And for the next year, I believe one of the most exciting is when we will try to position ourselves as an international market. Mm-hmm. You were suggesting like US, UK, Australia, how to actually be able to sell in English profitably and how to actually get known. And this is a totally different game. And I believe we would need like totally different knowledge for that. But this is like the direction that we want to go to. Because I really enjoy like one of my favorite e-commerce stories is like Gymshark. Mm-hmm. And for them, it's really exciting to see like how on the path that they have, that they want to build the international brand. And what they need to do, they need to open up local offices, they got investment, they were present on fairs, build up the community, hire these huge ambassadors, and so on. So yeah, this I believe is like the key steps going further. And I believe we will find out that there's many challenges there, and there are positions that we will need to have and teams and helps that we don't know that we will need, but I'm super excited about what will happen like in the next 3 years.
Yeah, and I bet with your mindset, you always find a solution for every challenge. So I don't have any roadblock what I could see that you're not achieving this goal.
Yeah, for me, I think will we hire the right people and develop the right people at the right time. I think this will be the main. Plus also support with the processes. So yeah, I think it also helped when we were together in Zakynthos, because there were so many people there and you saw like 15 different stories, mm-hmm. all of them great successes at different stages of their journey. And you see that there's so many ways, and there were a couple of people that were going through like super high 9 figures, and you saw, okay, these people are just thinking in a totally different game. So yeah, it's really good to actually create a network, to think that way. A lot of challenges on the way, but a lot to learn also on that journey.
I bet. Yeah, I totally agree. And regarding your agency WeScale, so you mentioned you have like 4 big clients right now. What is your plan for WeScale? Would you even say, okay, I want to focus on those 4 brands, I want to open up and take new brands? What is the goal here?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. So the way we actually had this discussion during the summer. So what we want to do is we want to actually position ourselves and work as an exclusive marketing partner for e-commerce brands in Europe. So the way we see it is that we will actually build up a really awesome marketing team that can also help beyond marketing with the strategy, how to build up, how to open the markets, how to localize, to help businesses build up the operations for the scale, and to support limited number of partners and to build up multiple projects with a certain partner. So we don't want to actually create our own e-commerce store or something like that. We want to be the best possible in the areas that we work with and partner up with companies to either like opening new markets, build up the sales, start something from scratch. So we have like in 3 weeks, we will launch one e-commerce store that we built totally from scratch. So actually we choose the product, we build the design, we write down the copy, choose the market, build up the marketing strategy. So this is like the investment, a test for the investment for the future, because I want to see if we are able to do something like that. And I actually saw a really good future in this business model to know how to set up something, so how to build like a really good quality products and to build a huge e-commerce store behind it. I believe if you know something like that, you have nothing to worry for the future.
I totally agree. I mean, e-commerce, yeah, last year was such a boost for the e-commerce industry, and it keeps growing and growing and growing. So totally agree. You have chosen a really nice path for the future and your future's teams and so on. Cool. Yuri, amazing content. I bet the people will love it. I will promote this episode on Instagram and everywhere. And I can already see their comments and their feedbacks. I have the feeling that was really valuable for the people here. When there is someone in...
Hey, Daniel.
Yeah, sure.
So, sorry to interrupt you, but maybe one thing that could be also valuable for the listeners is maybe if I just give a little bit brief on the content creation process that we have.
That's like a typical Steve Jobs move, like one last thing, one more thing. Let's do it.
Okay. I promise I'll be quick.
Take your time.
Okay, cool. One topic that I believe is actually relevant for every either marketer, e-commerce owner, is how to actually build up the system behind to get enough creatives. Because once you scale, I experienced this a lot in my journey. So when I actually when I joined the e-commerce company as a CMO, I always have the struggle, do we have enough creatives? So what we have done is, the first part was that we actually hired a branded creative agency. And we said, okay, we need that many creatives. Okay, we got the creatives. Some of them work, some of them wasn't. And I say, okay, guys, we need 400 creatives per month. And they say, okay, we can provide you 30 creatives per month. Okay, guys, this won't work for us. Okay, then we found a partner that was able to produce like a lot of content. And problem with them was the diversity of the content. So they have like one studio, and the studio was set up as a house, but the environment behind was all the time the same. Okay, so for the first few rounds, it worked awesomely. But then we hit the challenge when we actually, the content was just getting the same. So we changed the actors, obviously, but the diversity was the problem. And the system that we built in the previous company, and I would also suggest, if I believe you talk about this in the previous podcasts, is to leverage the power of UGC. One system that we have, and I can actually share it with you and highly recommend to build up something like that, if you have the struggle of not having enough creatives, is that you actually find like creators. It could be either influencers, photographers, or someone who is just good at creating content, and hire them on the monthly basis to create content for you. Not to post content, but to produce content for you. So if you are going to like 6 figures, 7 figures, I would actually recommend to build up the team of 8 to 10 people that you can actually send the products to, that you need photos and videos from. And then you can actually, your post-production team, your video editors, your graphic designers can use for the ads, the website, and so on. This is like, it saves you a lot of time. It saves you a lot of money. It creates diversity. And trust me, it works. So if you find the right creators, negotiate with, deal with them. So how to find them is to test as much as possible, plus to also see which creators, your maybe competitors or some big players on the market, and ask them if they want to build the creatives for you, and make sure that you also get the rights to use these creatives either for the website and the ads. And moving from there on, what one thing that we are building also internally right now is to have like in-house one person that is in charge of like art director, who is in charge of mood boards, coming up with the campaigns, and then actually set up teams on different parts of the world that you hire as a production studio. So if you're going for 8 figures and beyond, you actually also need to step up on your content creation game. So what we have right now is that we have 3 teams that we can use, and we just ship the products to Bali and they do all the shooting for us. So this is another thing to also leverage, is that you don't need to hire someone. It's good to also have like in-house studio, so the speed happens, but also think about the diversity, and also think about different professional production that you can leverage with different teams apart of the world.
And would you recommend some sort of like volume of content for different revenue stages of the business?
Well, I would actually need to prepare for this question, but I can go from the top of my head. So I can actually say, like, for one business that we have, so right now we invest, like, we do like 4 million per month with them. Mm-hmm. And I believe, so the number of creatives that we get on the monthly basis is somewhere between 300 to 500, something like that. So it's the, I would say 80% of them is UGC. So it's not that big on investment, but it works because we have like the businesses mostly paid social, on the paid social side. And we use like professional shooting and so on for product launches, for some special events campaign, for the website and so on. But yeah, I would start with, if you are starting with and you have like 1,000 or a couple of hundred euros of daily budget, I would say that start with having like 5 to 10 different creatives per week, and then just see, okay, if I add additional 10 creatives to test, what happens? So also, if we produce like 500, we get 500 creatives, we don't use 500. For me, it was always how to create that many creatives that the media buyers won't be able to test them. Because the usual challenge is the other way around. Media buyers are just having this problem with, okay, we have 5 creatives and we need to do 20 variations from it. And they just are just going through the same content over and over again. And try to think about, okay, how can I create that many content that the advertisers won't be able to spend, plus also how to leverage like the organic side of the social proof, people posting the products, influencers, smaller influencers, normal people, and so on, how to build up the community to create that social proof on the market.
And for your media buyers, are you giving them some sort of software to create faster on the ads, or do they do everything manually?
So we play a little bit with imports, and so with importing the ads, we use Magix also. Mm-hmm. I think it's a German tool, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Magix. Yeah. So we use that, plus also one interesting thing that we are implementing. So we have this implemented, plus also are building on top of that, is make sure when you have like this huge number of volume of creatives, to build up the system for reporting. Mm-hmm. It's really important to have like a structured naming system for the ads and the creatives for you to quickly understand what's working on the overall. So not only to understand what's working on the ad set level, but to also working what's working on the country level. Which creatives are performing well on the retargeting? Which creatives are performing well for prospecting? Which are performing well for the retention side? So make sure that you have like, template for naming that you can use to be able to extract either in Google Sheets, Google Data Studio, or whatever, to understand what is what's performing and what's not. And then make sure that this is not used only with your media buyers, but make sure that also your video editors, your graphic designers, your influencer marketing specialists understand this report, so they know what kind of creatives work. And based on that, it's a learning system for them. Okay, I tried this didn't work. Let's try something else. Or this did work. Let's try something similar. Make sure to create this knowledge sharing system towards the whole marketing department. Also, make sure your email marketing understand what is working on the creative side.
That's the Jure I know, always over-delivering. I love it. Cool. So that was an amazing tip for the end. We already implemented to our agency a couple of weeks and months ago. So I totally agree.
Awesome.
That's working amazingly well. So for all the listeners, I bet some of them are super pumped right now. Are you open for, I don't know, answering questions? How could they connect with you? Are you on Instagram? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so if you want to contact me directly, you can go through LinkedIn. I think it would be the best way. So regarding my first name and last name, I suggest it would be easier to copy-paste it.
I put it in the description as well.
Episode. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think it will be easier. So I actually have the last name is originally from Germany. So maybe it will be easier for the public to write. I have a lot of challenges with Slovenian people, how to write it. But other than that, yeah, we can connect via LinkedIn. If you want, Daniel, we can also do a Q&A or something like that. And I answer the audience, whatever fits best. But if you want to contact me directly, I think it would be best through LinkedIn.
Amazing. All right, Jure, I'm so grateful that you have been part of this podcast. Thank you so much for today's episode. As soon as it goes out, I will notify you and publish it everywhere so people get to see it.
Awesome.
And thanks for your time. I can't wait to visit you in Slovenia. Then we will definitely drink a beer or a water. I don't know. I'm currently training a lot, so I don't drink a lot of alcohol. But
yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, Daniel, thank you very much for the invitation. It was, I think this hour went by so fast.
Yes, totally.
For me. So it was a great discussion. I hope the listeners will find some value in it. Can't wait to host you in Slovenia. I think I also promised you to visit you in Germany. I try to stick also to my part of the promise. But yeah, other than that, to all the listeners, crush it in Q4. I believe we have a great opportunity this year, also for the following years. Although the environment is changing constantly, I really have the passion on what we are doing, and I believe the biggest things are yet to come.
Amazing. Jure, thank you so much. Have an amazing week.
Yeah, you too. Ciao.
Ciao.
Wir hoffen, dass dir diese Folge wieder gefallen hat. Wenn du auch endlich konstant und profitabel 6- bis 7-stellige Umsätze mit deinem Online-Shop erreichen möchtest, dann gehe jetzt auf ecomsecrets.de und buche eine kostenlose Strategiesession. In diesem 45-minütigen Gespräch zeigen wir dir ganz genau, welche Schritte du umsetzen musst, um profitabel skalieren zu können. Es sind immer die gleichen 5 Elemente, die du meistern musst, um deinen Online-Shop erfolgreich zu machen. Du willst wissen, welche das sind? Gehe jetzt auf ecomsecrets.de und finde es heraus.